part of the same thing. But then that in and of itself, I mean, this ability to sum different issues under this one specialized term, that of course led to this branching off into its own movement, whereby it only becomes one among many interest groups and becomes progressively detached in a lot of ways from, say, labor issues or more general public health issues that might have to do with industry, right, and environment, and so on, so on and so forth. So there is a way in which what, you know, this was, I think, a political and cultural victory at the time, but it also had some long-term costs that I think were invisible that are just really interesting to look at with these 40 or 50 years of distance.
I thought your historical, literary historical segment about the sort of appropriation of nature by Hitler's sort of apparatus was interesting. And in fact, like, it seemed to me there were more parallels in the United States than differences of the literature of that period, with like the poetry of place or the literature of place being seen as a national literature here in the U.S. as well, with fewer problems in certain respects. But the American avant-garde evacuated, especially in the 30s, the writing of place, I think, as a site of resistant literature, anti-nationalist resistance. In fact, it sort of became appropriate by the state modes that sponsored sort of place-oriented, you know, writing groups. And so it just seemed to me like maybe there's a lot of parallel stories that you could tell as well between sort of the nationalist, you know, worldwide, or at least like in the developed world trajectory of the way that literature of place gets appropriated by nationalist states, and whether those are far right wing or whether those are more centralized in the nation. Throughout the 30s, and this in part leads to the sort of impasse before the emergence in both the U.S. and Germany of sort of modern environmentalism much later. But it's almost a full generation removed in both the U.S., I think, and in Germany, it seems to me.
You're being very kind in the way you phrase your criticism. What your criticism, I think, essentially is that I'm vastly oversimplifying the two histories, and you're totally right about that. In the 19th century, too, I mean, one could argue that the difference between the two kinds of environmentalist movement is not quite as stark as I've painted it here, in that when you think of something like the creation of national parks, I mean, in the rhetoric surrounding the foundation of national parks, there is talk of historical legacies and things like that. I still think it's justified the difference is when you read these documents side by side are more striking than the similarities, which are undoubtedly there. What you allude to, I think, is really important. I mean, the appropriation or the use of nature for nationalist purposes, which, of course, in the U.S. also runs throughout the 19th century, right? I mean, this is nature's nation. So that has a long history, and the same is true, you're absolutely right, of a lot of developing nations and so forth. I still think that I would make an argument that that's a little bit different from what the Nazi legacy is, or at least what it became, because nationalism can be whatever it is. It isn't necessarily associated with genocide and with historical trauma in the way that the particular kind of nationalism in the 30s and 40s in Germany was. And I mean, this sort of became very clear to me in rereading recently John Elder's book, Imagining the Earth, which was one of the first books on eco-poetry. Came out in a second edition, came first out in 1985, I think, and then a second edition in 1996, where at one point he has one whole chapter where he talks about Thoreau's metaphor of compost and of envisioning culture as sort of a compost where decay leads to cultural continuity, and you sort of reuse what is there in the past. And he compares this to T.S. Eliot, Tradition and the Individual Talent, and the reusing of the past for continuous cultural tradition. Jed Razula has explored the same metaphor in a whole book on nature and eco-poetry also. That's another thing that's simply unthinkable in the German 20th century context. I mean, I just don't think that there are any German writers or intellectuals that readily think of Germany as having a continue, or think positively of culture as sort of a continuous dynamism. I mean, in Germany, what prevails is the sense of total rupture and the desire for total rupture, of course, after the war. So I do think there are real differences, even as I think you're right that, I mean, in the U.S., too, you have sort of this emerging countercultural movements in the 20s that then in the U.S. through the Cold War kind of get squashed. So there is that interesting hiatus between the 20s and the 60s, I think, in a lot of countries, where certain types of political resistance emerge, and then for, I think, what are relatively different reasons that get submerged between the 30s and the 50s and only reemerge in the 60s.
I like so the way you say it, like that particular literary modes are unavailable, and I like the way that you phrase that.
Right.
It seems really appropriate.
That seemed to me, though, I mean, I was sort of almost working there from the notion of constraint, you know, like in poetry. Yeah, like some certain forms of experimental poetry, like Uli Kuh, and so I've worked with the notion of, you know, poetic form as constraint, that there's certain things you can't do, and that sort of became the seed for thinking about things that are not poetic constraints in that formal sense, but cultural constraints, that they're just certain modes that you can't use for cultural and historical reasons. That's what it means. Yeah.
I have a question about the distinction you draw between the two different, three different cultures. It seems to kind of recapitulate a stereotype about American versus Europe. Americans think there's such a thing as a pursuit of happiness. They are optimistic and upbeat / ignorant. Europeans are dark, brooding, complicated. And I was wondering if, when you look at a poem like The Cage, the last line, man/earth will probably be solved, that's clearly not. It's not a naive poem. And I was wondering, and even the other one, the Nightmares, maybe even be read ironically, perhaps. But I was wondering, I'm willing to accept that the German poems are all dark and depressing, but are there American poems that are more like the German ones, do you think? Or,
yeah.
Would you maintain this binary?
I think by and large I would. I mean, I think if you read large swaths of the poetry, the difference is really quite striking, but of course there's never a one-to-one sort of national stereotype equation. I mean, if you look at certain poems by Wendell Berry on soil erosion, I mean, he does get very bitter at times and very angry, you know, and Gary Snyder at times writes very angry poems. So I think not necessarily during this period. I mean, I see him writing more angry poems lately.
That's what I was thinking. Probably in recent days that it's probably been more cynical.
Right, and I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, I focused here on the moment of emergence, you know, the poetry that emerges from that first political push. Yeah, I'm sorry if it corresponds to a stereotype, but to some extent it does. And I'm not sure, I mean, I would not make this a statement about European eco-poetry at this point, to begin with, because I don't think that necessarily applies to British at all. I mean, the Brits are always apart, but we don't recognize that they're really Europeans, actually. I'm just kidding. But then there are other, reasonably familiar with a Spanish tradition. There you don't really have an emergence of eco-poetry in that sense, around the same. I mean, we're still, you know, under the Franco dictatorship. So the fact that you even have the emergence of a whole genre that you can meaningfully summarize under that label is already pretty nationally distinct. It's not pan-European at all. And in France, too, I mean, the emergence of environmentalist movement and then environmental literature is much more complicated, I think, much more subdued. I mean, I was interested in Germany. Not just because, I mean, it is an environmental movement that I've studied in some depth, but also because it seemed comparable in the way in which it does develop a really strong political movement fairly early on, whereas in a lot of other European countries, with the exception of Britain, where it also emerges around the same time, but in France and Spain, it comes much later and much in much weaker form, and to this day has not evolved the same kind of really strong political presence that it has in Germany. I mean, all of these countries now have green parties, and in France it's reasonably influential, the Spanish one is not very much.